back together again, you and I chatting it up Tuesday style, the 28th of October, 2025 on Connecticut Today, where I looked at a recent poll of New Hampshire Democrats that gives former Biden White House Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg an early lead for the 2028 Democratic presidential nomination. Big question, though, will Buttigieg, being openly gay, hurt his national ambitions? Yankee Institute blogger Megan Portfolio stopped by to talk about her latest column regarding a major outflow of state pension benefits that end up leaving Connecticut and enriching other spots in the U.S. Quinnipiac University School of Communications Dean Nadine Barnett Cosby, a native of Jamaica, phoned in to talk about the devastating impact of Hurricane Melissa on Jamaica and the wider Caribbean community. So, because we seem to be in this constant political cycle, whether it's locally for cities and towns, whether it's statewide here in Connecticut, or whether it's national, we have to start with this. Because there's a couple of ways I want to look at this. One with a sigh of relief and one that poses a serious question. So we're glad you're with us today at 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. Is there any way possible, not today, because today is the 28th of October, 2025, but, about 3 years from now, say in late October, early November of 2028, in the next electoral cycle, this is a simple question I have for you. But it doesn't have a simple answer. Well, to me, it has a simple answer, and I'll explain that momentarily. But simple question for you today. In 3 years from now, late October 2028 till the next presidential election on whatever election day is, November, whatever. I should have looked it up, but I didn't. First Tuesday after the first Monday. 3 years from now, would America be ready to elect an openly gay president? And I say 3 years from now because 3 years is an eternity, and sometimes things change in an eternity. And I want to start with this because it's interesting. And if you remember, back to the Biden days when I was doing this program, you know, at the end of 2019 into 2020, when Mr. Trump lost to Joe Biden, and we had the Biden years. What did I keep telling you about Pete Buttigieg, who has done a lot of TV, continues to do a lot of TV, and unfortunately or not, the label of, oh, the gay guy, and I say that, not saying that myself, but you hear that from a lot of people. Let's be honest with who we chum around with sometimes. We all know people that aren't of the most, advanced thinking on these things. And a lot of people would say, yeah, well, you know, there's a little inference there that whatever, as long as he's not in the White House. And I kept telling you back then, hey, this guy's good. This guy set aside his personal life, which for a lot of people they can't do. We'll get to that momentarily. But the guy's good on television. Now, you could say his policies weren't good when he was a mayor from South Bend, Indiana, out there in Notre Dame country. He wasn't exactly loved by a lot of the public servants, but he's still referred to as Mayor Pete, whatever. It's all cute. But I kept telling you folks, I said, watch for this guy because he's just good on camera. He's good at explaining stuff. He has that it about being, and Barack Obama had this too. Every president has it to some way, shape, or form. Some have it a little, some have it a lot. Bill Clinton had it. Ronald Reagan had it. Trump, he tries, but you wait for the inevitable sledgehammer. But having said that, in 3 years, once again, I'm not going to ask now because who knows what will happen in 3 years. But in 3 years from now, late October to early November of 2025, will things be as such that people in this country might vote for an openly gay individual, man or woman, but for this purpose, let's say Pete Buttigieg for the White House? And the reason I mention that is this. There is a new University of New Hampshire poll out there done by UNH, the Granite State poll, and it's gotten posted a few places today. And it's not necessarily a Connecticut poll. It is a poll of primary voters in New Hampshire. But now we all know, though, and some people don't like it because they don't think there's a representative sample of minorities, and they are pretty much correct on that. But we all, in about a year and a half, 2 years, everybody's going to see people traipsing up to New Hampshire to, you know, push their case to maybe run the country from 2028 to 2032. Among those who plan to vote in the 2028 Democratic presidential primary in New Hampshire, and they surveyed about 600 people, 19%. Now, it's a fractured field. 19% is, when you look at it on an aggregate scale, it's not a lot of people. But Pete Buttigieg right now in a pretty conservative part of the country, although New Hampshire is changed over the years. A lot of the lefties escaped them and the Massachusetts taxes and went up to New Hampshire. Pete Buttigieg among New Hampshire Democrats gets 19%. He's on top of the list. He's number one. He's numero uno. Now, and I don't want to say Pete Buttigieg is good news or bad news, but there is better news in this poll. That Chris Murphy doesn't show. So for the 11 or 12 million bucks and all the touting that Chris Murphy has seen on this, he doesn't show. In fact, there's, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15. There are 18 Democrats, 18 in this poll. And Chris Murphy doesn't pick up a single point. So maybe his rhetorical slop is not selling nationwide. But you know who is selling? And I told you about this for years and years and years. Pete Buttigieg, he has a spouse, a male spouse. He is married. I think they adopted, one or two kids? Or in vitro, or however they did their kids, I don't know. But according to about 600 likely New Hampshire Democratic primary voters, and it's not just a New Hampshire question, it's a question that the entire country has probably been thinking of, because you have your firsts that any country tends to, certain countries with a racial makeup, tend to check off. First minority president, and we had Barack Obama, although some people will say, hey, that doesn't count because his mother's white, but I digress. So we made some progress here, President Obama, two terms. Then there are still people saying, hey, how about a woman president? Well, still might happen. We haven't done that. And then there are a handful of countries around the world, more than you would think, who have had openly gay leaders. Is that going to fly in America? Now, let me warn you about something. If you folks want to call, that's fine for this topic. You know we have some fun here. I'm not doing this for comedy today. So if you want to call up and give me an educated opinion on this, you can. None of your gay jokes are going to make the air. Trust me. We have a device and human beings who can trigger that device to prevent that. However, we lead off with this. Now, first of all, it's good news. Like I said, Chris Murphy ain't on the list. I'll tell you who else is on the list. But topping the list, getting one out of five votes, roughly, granted it's 3 years away. 2 years away for the primary process, is the former Transportation Secretary of the U.S., Pete Buttigieg, who was openly gay. Now, have there been other gay candidates for the presidency? I have no idea. And frankly, I don't care who sleeps with who if your policies are good. But there are people in this country, for racial reasons, we all know some ethnic groups are not quite as tolerant of gay candidates as others are. There are religious issues, too, behind this. Branches of Christianity may have a problem with this. Branches of Islam may have a problem with this. But I ask you, would America ever elect an openly gay president? And would you care? And I know we're still 3 years and change out from 2028, but I saw this today and I went, New poll out there from the University of New Hampshire, New Hampshire Democrats. You know who came out on top? On the top for all, there's 18 or 20 names there. Pete Buttigieg, who served as transportation secretary a few years back in the Biden White House. Now, look, his policies were criticized by some, praised by others, whatever. But there's an overriding thing here, and you got to address the elephant in the room. Pete Buttigieg is gay. Now, there have been a handful of countries around the world, Ireland, I think, currently, with a gay leader. Doesn't seem to bother those people. Would that sell here in the U.S.? I'm just wondering here, because I saw this poll today. It's not a Connecticut poll. It's not a national poll. But I saw it, and I said, yeah, I told you. Remember, you remember what I've been saying here on this program during the Biden years? Pete Buttigieg on camera explaining things is good. In America, in 28 in a few years, would his sexual orientation hold him back? I don't know. You tell me. We'll start off with Jeff in Westport. Jeff, you're on. What's up, buddy? How are you?
Hey, Paul. How you doing?
All right. What's up?
I don't think we really even have to worry about this, Paul, because if our boy Trump in office does all the good things that he's doing, I think J.D. Vance is going to be the next president, which would be a great thing, I think. But Pete Buttigieg, all I have to say is Bud Light 2.0.
You think so? Really?
Look at Bud Light. Look at what's happening with the Super Bowl right now. All the controversy.
So
just because the guy wears a dress on stage.
But what if Pete Buttigieg? Do you think Pete Buttigieg? Let me ask it this way: could he come out with policies and be so appealing to people that eventually, Jeff, we get to a point in the country, and maybe we're not here yet, right? But we get to a point in the country where we say, he's gay. I don't care. Because other countries have done that. Is that ever going to happen or not?
I don't care if the guy's purple and he's got two heads. If he's a good politician and he does good for America, that's great. Right. Look at Mondani. He's getting in New York and everybody said the communists will never make it. That's crazy.
I know. So I'll get into
Mondani
that later.
I think anybody, even Kamala, could get in.
Yeah, we'll see. All right, Jeff, appreciate it. Thanks. All right. Yeah, now, here's the thing. And I've always said, and I've kind of defended conservatives on this, well, you'll never vote for a woman. No, conservatives, they wouldn't vote for Hillary, though. There's a difference between a woman and somebody who makes sense. A woman and a sensible woman. Don't get angry with me. You know what I mean. But think about it. And Jeff, thanks for the call. And again, I saw this poll today. It's not a national poll. And nationally, when, you know, you're polling large urban areas with large black and Hispanic populations, and let's face it, you do some polling, you know, a lot of urban populations are not the most progressive when it comes to sexual orientation. Neither are some members who practice Islam, nor some Jews, nor some Christians. There are still pockets of people in this country, maybe not out of hatred, but out of what they consider what is right and wrong with their religion or family, whatever, you know what I mean. So are you surprised here? Does this surprise you? I think we can have a discussion on this without, you know, straying into areas where people are going to say, see, You're just anti-gay. No, no, no. But when I saw this today, I said, wow, Pete Buttigieg, are you surprised that he tops the Democratic polling in New Hampshire or not? One of the great local folks we have on writes the Hartford Portfolio blog at the Yankee Institute. The one and only Megan Portfolio was here. Megan, how are you? Did you get any angry email from any unions this week or anybody like that? Or are they all nice to you?
No, because I wasn't like being mean to them. Okay. I wasn't like, you know, trying to rain on their parade. It was I was spewing facts. Okay. Not drama.
Okay. All right. Now, before we talk about your current column, which people should read because I found that interesting, have you heard, because you're much more plugged into this stuff than I have you heard anything more about this housing bill that kind of doesn't, but really does, but may not, but kind of does exist? Is there anything leaking your way about this?
I've been hearing a bunch of different things. I actually have an article, I think, well, once my editor goes through and takes out all my snarky funny lines. Hopefully he's not listening.
Believe me, having been a newspaper columnist at one time, I know exactly from what you're talking about, yes.
Sometimes I have to leave a comment, like, don't touch this line, it's funny.
Yes, I used to say, come on, really? Oh, you can't put that in there anyway. So you have something coming out on it. Excellent. Good.
Yeah, they had a conference last week, the Build for Connecticut or Build All for Connecticut, something like that. And there was a roundtable with our leadership. Liz Karanowitz was the moderator. And my takeaway on it was those in power right now really have no interest in negotiating, that they want what they want, and they're not going to put in a watered-down bill. I don't really know what that means. All I know is there's 100 pages floating around somewhere. Yeah. Supposedly 85% of that people, you know, agree on, and then there's this 15%, but it doesn't appear that they have any interest in negotiating it. And the parts I think that they're talking about are parking, having to do with parking and having to do with that fair share allocation. And then I heard another rumor. Now, don't take this to the bank.
Okay.
But I heard.
You heard.
It's possibly going to be pushed out till December.
Oh,
but, don't send me mean emails if it is still in November. This is just like the scuttlebutt that I'm hearing from the Capitol.
Nice. I knew you would hear something. Okay. So now you want to tell us about how much pension money, for whatever reason, that we pay people here doesn't stay here. So what's up with that?
Yeah, apparently you have a new export in Connecticut, and that's pension checks. So one out of four pension dollars are literally sent to other states. So to put it in perspective, in 2024, we mailed out $2.7 billion in pension checks. A quarter of that was sent out of state. So that comes to roughly $675 million.
Okay.
So we're actually, you know, helping out Main Street, but not in Connecticut. We're helping out Main Street out in Florida, which obviously is where most of the former state employees retire to.
Sure.
Not most of this cohort retires to Florida. I mean, they've got great weather. Well, if you like the humidity, but great thing, they don't have income tax.
Hello.
Which means there's no tax on their pension.
Yeah.
So it's like it's a no-brainer. So the irony is the system that the state employees unions have created, this, you know, $60 billion worth of debt, is making cost of living here too expensive. So they leave. Mm-hmm. And I don't blame them for leaving. I mean, I plan on leaving in, 20 years. Well, I'm not a state employee, so I have to actually work till I'm 70.
Okay.
So in about 20 years, I'm picking up and moving out.
Yeah.
What about you? You going to stay in Wally World?
No, I'm staying. I'm in Wally World. Oh, yeah.
I mean, I want to stay. I'm hoping, with my work at Yankee, we can, kind of right the ship here.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and again, this you're right. It's sad because we create this system. We're dealt these cards. You know, tax money goes into this. And look, you're right. You can't force people to stay somewhere. This is not China. This is not Russia. And you're always going to have a percentage of people, right, that will leave because of weather, be closer to the grandkids or whatever. But it'd be interesting to see, Megan, all things being equal tax-wise, right? If people say, you know what, I'm going to stay. Yeah, I don't like the snow, but the other three seasons are great, so I'm going to stay here. It'd be interesting to see if we could develop a level playing field, which we won't, what would happen?
I think people would say, I want to say, I love Connecticut. I love our seasons.
Mm-hmm.
I love how we don't get hammered by hurricanes every other year. I mean, we do get them. We don't get hammered with tornadoes.
Yep.
We've got water. We don't have crazy wildfires. I love this state and I want to stay, but it just comes down to dollars and cents. Can I afford to stay here? I mean, we still have property taxes. Why are our property taxes so high? It's because the state's bills are too high and they can't funnel down the money down to us. They can't funnel down the enough educational spending, you know, money to the towns. They're always underfunding, you know, the pilot program.
Mm-hmm.
They're always underfunding education. So because we have all this burden of the pensions and the health care to your dead obligation, there's nothing that can be done.
Yeah.
I mean, they don't, it's almost as if they don't want to fix it because it can be fixed. I mean, we need to restructure our fixed costs, and that means we need to restructure the pension system.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe, you know, as of today, going forward, employees hired today, you know, there's no more pension. We have a 401k type system like the rest of us have. And this health care to your dead for you and your family members. I mean, that's a great perk, but this is a Cadillac plan that we give them. Like if you went on to our exchange, the Connecticut Exchange for Healthcare, the same employees are literally getting the top of the top, which nobody gets because it's so unaffordable. I mean, there's things that we can do to make it so that the costs come down, our property taxes come down, and people will stay here. This is a great state.
And like, for example, you're right, get rid of those Cadillac benefits till you're dead, all right? Because you're going to be covered to some point by Medicare. So set up a system that basically makes it so anything Medicare doesn't cover, the state will cover. So you still end up paying nothing out of pocket. But if we say, well, wait a minute, we have a federal system now, let's just assist the federal system. Look, I'm no whiz at this. I think that would save us some money. I think.
Oh, absolutely. But the state employees unions, they don't want any of this. In fact, they want to increase taxes. They want with their tax the rich schemes. Well, what does that mean? Tax the rich? How rich? And when those rich people are it's cold up here. I'm going to go down where it's warmer. I'm going to go down to one of the Carolinas. They have seasons down there.
Yeah.
My taxes will be lower. So then who's rich? Then now it's upper middle class that are considered rich. It just never ends. It's like the state employee unions refuse to do anything that benefits the rest of us.
I have a dear friend who was in media and in marketing and ever, and she and her hubby packed up. They were in Glastonbury, had a decent sized home in Glastonbury, got a nice buck when they sold it. And she's now in, I want to say, Georgia, one of the Carolinas. And she told me as soon as they turned 66, and they only moved down there a couple of years ago, their property tax is like maxed out at like $600 a year.
It's ridiculous. And if I hadn't got the job at Yankee, I was years ago, I was actually looking at Georgia. And when I was looking at the real estate, for what I could afford on one income, the homes were too big for me. They were literally too big, and the property taxes were in the hundreds.
Not
the tens of thousands.
Imagine that. All right. Folks, check it out. Again, it's probably something you've thought about, but go to YankeeInstitute.org. 1 in 4 state employee pension dollars now flies right out of Connecticut. Megan Portfolio, thank you. By the way, the big day, the big night on Friday, huh? Halloween.
Oh, my God. I'm so excited. I was listening to your weather report, and I was waiting for Friday because as of now, it's supposed to be like in the high 50s in Middletown, and they didn't say Friday, so I got a little nervous. So I did a quick Google, and we're still good to go.
All right. Two things. How's the dog?
Oh, he's great. He's getting a little haircut tomorrow.
Oh, okay. And how's the kid that thinks your decorations are too spooky?
Well, I thought it would be really funny to wear my Michael Myers mask out to get the mail the other day. And he happened to be outside, so he had come over. And he told me my mask wasn't scary, but he asked me not to put any more scary dolls on the front lawn.
Oh,
and I said, oh, I'm sorry, kid. I just found a box of them. There's going to be more.
All right, I'm going to leave that right there. Have a happy Halloween, and we'll talk to you next
year.
Bye. Megan is really into Halloween. Also, we look beyond Fairfield County. We chat with people who have connections to stuff happening around the rest of the country and around the world, keeping you in touch with those people. And joining us right now as we're giving you top and bottom of the hour updates on this Hurricane Melissa, which I saw some scientists saying could be quite possibly the strongest, most destructive hurricane to go into the books when it's all said and done since the beginning of recording this. Joining us right now is a native of Jamaica who I understand still has family there. She is also currently the dean of the Quinnipiac University School of Communications, Dr. Nadine Barnett Cosby. Dr. Cosby, good afternoon. Thank you for joining us. We really appreciate it.
Good afternoon, Paul. Thank you so much for having me.
What is the situation, Dr. Cosby, with your family and any connections you may still have on the island there? Have you been able to speak with them?
Well, most of the communication we've had on the island has been through my mother, who is actually living in Florida. She was able to speak with some family earlier this morning via WhatsApp. Since then, she hasn't really been able to make connection with anyone, but this was expected.
What is, Dr. Cosby, a lot of people kind of flippantly say, well, you know, they, not just Jamaica, but any time this happens, right? Well, they live down there. You know, they should expect it. They deal with this all the time. No, that's not. I mean, this is a level of storm I see we're seeing here that even the seasoned weather people are trying to put in words.
Absolutely. I really appreciate you mentioning that. One, this storm is, like you said, we haven't seen anything like this. And there are real concerns about the infrastructure not being set up to sustain a Cat 5 storm. You know, there are concerns about landslides, flooding, water pollution. You know, what does the island look like after a storm like this passes? And it certainly isn't something that is the norm or that folks in Jamaica expect to deal with. And, you know, my hope is that considering how little global emissions the Caribbean nations contribute mm-hmm. to, it would be, it's unfortunate that they do bear the brunt of stronger storms that are a result of global greenhouse gas emissions. They're the most vulnerable, and I hope that there is empathy, but also resounding support for the island from across the world, but certainly from the United States in the efforts to rebuild. But also, you know, there are going to be people that are completely displaced from their homes because of this storm. And I would hope that there will be, this is a humanitarian issue. I hope there will be some protection for those that maybe have family in the States or abroad and need to be temporarily displaced and could potentially stay with those families that they have abroad.
I saw a phrase being used on some of the all news channels today, Dr. Cosby, and the phrase read something like total structural failure. I've been at this for 40 something years. I've never seen that phrase used before.
Yeah. Same here. A phrase like that, I mean, it's gut-wrenching. And what does life look like after that?
Yeah, and is there a fear, too, and by the way, the guest is the dean of the School of Communications at Quinnipiac, Dr. Nadine Barnett Cosby, a native of Jamaica with family as well. Is there a fear, much the way we have here in the States, Dr. Cosby, of, you know, people in Florida or the Carolinas or other parts that, well, yeah, I've been through these. I'm not going to move. Everything will be good. Any sense that there's a fear of that?
Oh, yeah, there's absolutely a fear of that. And I think it's less that, you know, folks are feeling they've been through it and more of the fact that some folks simply don't have anywhere to go.
Yeah.
You know, it's hard enough to prepare for something like this. You can't prepare for something like this. But, you know, in terms of evacuating, it's easy to say that, but where does one go? You know, you have your home and that's about it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's really unfortunate, but it's the reality for so many people. And I often see it after these natural disasters, the question of, oh, well, why didn't they evacuate? And it's the reality for so many people that they simply just don't know where to go or have somewhere else to go and figure that they might fare better just shoring up their homes and trying to ride the storm out there.
And we're dealing, Dr. Cosby, with a nation like Jamaica, and there are others on the earth as well, that rely on tourism. And it's one thing to get the general populace back on their feet, which is going to be a monumental thing. But again, you have a nation that draws a tourist to the beauty of Jamaica. And what's happening to the hotels and the airports and, for example, all the touristy things around Kingston? So it's going to be an incredible double whammy here.
Yes, that's absolutely right. I mean, that's a real concern. As much as, you know, everyone loves to travel to Jamaica for all of the reasons, right? And it absolutely is a country that thrives on tourism because of the beauty of the country itself. What happens when, you know, beyond tourism, agriculture will be impacted, fishing will be impacted, there'll be a loss of crops, loss of boats, right, that are the livelihood for lots of people in Jamaica. So it really does become a question of where do they even begin to rebuild if this storm is as disastrous as predicted for the island?
And finally, Dr. Cosby, I've always marveled at people who live in places, maybe outside the U.S., you know, Jamaica, Cuba, the Bahamas, whatever, and even in the areas of the U.S. that get hit by this stuff. I have openly said on my show, I could not live with that fear, no matter how beautiful somewhere is. And I still to this day marvel at people who can be in beautiful places on the earth like Jamaica, but there's always that little worry that, hey, this could flip in a day or two. I mean, God bless people who can live in areas like that, no matter how accessible and beautiful they are. You know, Mother Nature can get really angry sometimes.
Yeah, that's very true. The way I think about it is, you know, I compare it to the folks that live in Florida.
Yeah.
You know, most of the time, it's perfectly fine.
Yeah.
But then hurricane season comes along, and in most cases, there are tropical storms, there are significant storms or even hurricanes, but they're not disastrous. So, you know, it's a matter of pros and cons. Most of the time, this is not a concern in the Caribbean. People are just living their daily lives. I guess in the same way that parts of the United States know that they're susceptible to earthquakes, but it's not something that's immediately on the radar in the day-to-day.
Yeah, well, Dr. Cosby, our sincere hope that any friends and family members and folks you know down in Jamaica make it through this okay, and please keep us up to date. The dean of the School of Communications, the Comm School at Quinnipiac University, and a native of Jamaica, Dr. Nadine Barnett Cosby. Dr. Cosby, thank you so much for sharing some feelings with us. We really appreciate it.
Thank you, Paul.
Appreciate it. Thank you, Dr. Nadine Barnett Cosby. There you go.